In March 2020, a family on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Lame Deer, Montana, got shocking news about their loved one, Christy Woodenthigh.
My daughter came and notified me that Christy was run over. And I said, is she okay? And she's like, no, she died. I was like, what?
Missing Justice from CBS News takes you inside what really happened that night and the federal investigation that followed. Listen to Missing Justice from CBS News on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jen Landon, and I play Teeter on the Paramount Network original series Yellowstone. As you know, Yellowstone is back and bigger than ever, and so is the official Yellowstone podcast. This isn't just your typical recap podcast. Every week, you'll get exclusive access to cast and crew members who will take you behind the scenes of Yellowstone in a way that no other podcast can. Saddle up for all new episodes of the official Yellowstone podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and Happy New Year. I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. As you will see, today is largely a Sunday morning of remembrance, beginning with yesterday's passing of Pope Benedict XVI. He was actually Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, who died at the age of 95. You may recall his decision to step down in 2013, the first pope to do so in some 600 years. For the almost 10 years that followed, Benedict lived peacefully in a monastery at the Vatican Gardens, increasingly frail as the years passed. We begin with a remembrance from our Seth Doan in Rome.
For nearly a decade, there were two men in white at the Vatican.
Was it difficult as a church to have two popes at the same time?
I think Benedict was able to make it work because he was so willing to move back out of the limelight and live a life that was really monastic at the end. He was very good about not overshadowing Pope Francis.
A papal passing and a complex legacy coming up this Sunday morning.
As you've probably heard, we've lost a legendary broadcaster. The great Barbara Walters passed away Friday at age 93. We'll also be remembering her this morning with some colleagues who knew her well, Sam Donaldson and our own Ted Koppel.
Barbara came up through the school of hard knocks. When she began on the Today Show, things could hardly have been much tougher for her.
Men made the rules in those early days of television.
When I was first on the Today Show, I was hired as a writer. I was only allowed to write for the women.
But Barbara Walters was a force to be reckoned with. A journalist through and through, tough, serious, competitive.
I said to her later, Barbara, well, I thought we were friends. She said, yes, we're friends, but I needed that interview.
This Sunday morning, friends remembering a friend, a fond look back at the one-of-a-kind career of Barbara Walters.
We can't leave the old year behind without saying hail and farewell
to so many others we lost during the 12 months just past. Lee Cowan does the honors.
Ladies and gentlemen, the First Lady of Country Music, Loretta Lynn.
From country music queens to silver screen luminaries.
Off you get. No room for passengers now.
I was insightful. I was witty. Meryl Streep will play me in the movie.
To those who filled our lives with laughter. Later, a Sunday morning tradition. We bid a fond hail and farewell to some of those who left us this past year.
We'll also be taking some time to look forward. We've asked some of our CBS News colleagues around the world to give us a sense of what could lie ahead in the year 2023. And as we ring in the new, all through the morning, we'll look back at some of the past year's best in movies, music, books, and more. It's the first Sunday morning of this new year, January 1st, 2023. And we'll be back in a moment. It happened yesterday.
The death of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. He was the first German pope in 1,000 years. In many ways a guardian of Vatican traditions, he was a respected Catholic theologian, a professor, and he played the piano. By his own admission, a weak leader who struggled with the formidable Vatican bureaucracy. Seth Doane is in Rome.
A scholar, academic, and fierce defender of the faith, he was conservative to the core. But this most orthodox of popes did the most unorthodox thing when he became the first pontiff in 600 years to resign. Burying a retired pope is also unprecedented in modern times. Saturday evening, the current pope, Francis, paid tribute, calling Benedict XVI a noble, kind man who was a gift to the world. When Benedict retired in 2013, he acknowledged in Latin that the strains of duty had become too much. He was stepping down as the church was rattled by sex abuse and corruption scandals.
You think of Pope Benedict as such a conservative, but in resigning, it was a revolutionary thing.
It was a pretty progressive thing to do. In some ways, he was very much in line with this idea of modernizing the church. I think it reflects his attention to the fact that we're in a contemporary age. You know, before the modern age, popes didn't live so long.
Father Mark Lewis is an American Jesuit priest and rector of the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome.
I think one of the things that's fascinating is he's one of the few popes who wrote books during his papacy. So he did 3 volumes in Jesus Christ. And what's really interesting about those books is he didn't write them as Pope Benedict. He wrote them as Joseph Ratzinger.
Born in 1927, Joseph Ratzinger was the son of a policeman and a cook, growing up in a small Bavarian town in Germany. He joined the Hitler Youth, as was compulsory, and later was conscripted into the German army. He'd wind up deserting and turned to religion, rising through the ranks of the church. As cardinal, he ran the organization charged with defending church doctrine and developed a reputation as a strict conservative. Maintaining those hardline views as pope, he strongly opposed gay marriage and the ordination of women. And in 2009, he caused an uproar by dismissing condoms as a way to prevent AIDS. While Benedict was also criticized for not taking action against bishops who ignored or covered up clerical sex abuse, he was the first pope to publicly meet victims of abuse, and he apologized. As pope, he was credited with reaching out to other faiths, including Judaism. He was a linguist, a bookworm, and a pianist who loved Mozart's music. Pope News Benedict of the former pope's death came as we were speaking
style,
with Father Lewis Saturday morning.
To him, I think he was a very gentle man, and I think he tended to listen to people and talk very, very much from the heart.
That first point, his theology, yeah?
Bad news.
What?
Pope died.
The pope just died?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. What does that mean for you?
Well, I think, in a way, we're sort of fortunate that we had at least a few days of preparation. It also gives us a chance to really reflect on that legacy, on what he gave to the church, and that example of resignation and living a life of isolation in his last years.
The last pontiff to resign was Pope Gregory XII. That was 1415, and he moved hundreds of miles from Rome. But Benedict stayed close, calling himself Pope Emeritus and living in a monastery set in the sprawling Vatican Gardens. Was it difficult as a church to have 2 popes, a former pope and a living pope at the same time?
I think Benedict was able to make it work because he was so willing to move back out of the limelight. He was very good about not overshadowing Pope Francis. I think Francis saw him as someone he could consult with, and maybe the only person in the world who knew what he was going through.
Pope Francis will preside over the former pope's funeral mass Thursday, and from tomorrow, Benedict's body will lie in St. Peter's Basilica so the faithful can pay tribute.
Hey, it's Roy Wood Jr. Every week I sneak away from The Daily Show and bring you Roy's Job Fair, a dope podcast where we laugh about bad jobs or figure out ways to be better at the jobs we have. We've had on legends like Carrie Champion.
Oh, he fired us. The next day we came in and he gave us our check for the week. He paid us out for the week and said, thank you guys, but no thank you.
We all need something to eat, someone to love, and a way to provide. This podcast cannot help you with the first two. Listen to Roy's Job Fair on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Our special guest, Mo Rocca. And we're going to talk about Mobituaries. There's no podcast I love more than this one.
It's basically things that I think deserve a second look. Already this season, we had John Denver. We had names. We looked at names like Mildred, Bertha, and Todd, which fell off the map. And I'm sorry that we didn't include Major, because that would have been really interesting, actually. Do you know where it ranks, Major?
Very, very low.
Yeah.
For more from this week's conversation, follow The Takeout with Major Garrett on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
With a land war in Europe, the worst inflation in 40 years, and a pandemic that refuses to go away, 2022 was certainly a turbulent time. We take a quick look back at the year that was. In January, the James Webb Space Telescope entered orbit. The telescope has since yielded a series of stunning images of deep space. In February, Russia invaded Ukraine, igniting a bloody conflict now in its 10th month. In March, researchers discovered the wreck of Endurance, the ship from Ernest Shackleton's ill-fated transantarctic expedition that got underway in 1914. April brought the confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the United States Supreme Court. In May, a gunman in Uvalde, Texas, killed 19 students and two teachers at Robb Elementary School. It was the third deadliest school shooting in U.S. history. In June, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, effectively criminalizing abortion in much of the nation. Former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was assassinated in July, just 2 days before that country's parliamentary elections. In August, the FBI conducted a search of Mar-a-Lago, the home of former President Donald Trump. 18 documents labeled top secret were found. In September, Britain's Queen Elizabeth II died in Scotland at the age of 96. Her son Charles succeeded her as king. Elon Musk took control of Twitter in October, bringing to the social media giant a brash leadership style, along with thousands of layoffs. In November, a projected red wave fizzled as Republicans won a slim majority in the House and Democrats held control of the United States Senate. In December, a suspect was arrested and charged with first-degree murder in the deaths of four University of Idaho students. And WNBA star Brittany Griner returned home after a prisoner swap with Russia. She says she'll return to the court this season. We look ahead now to 2023 with some help from our CBS News correspondents around the world. We begin with national security correspondent David Martin.
After 10 months of intense combat and a staggering expenditure of ammunition, the war in Ukraine heads into a cold and dark new year. For Ukraine and its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, it is a fight for survival. For Russia and Vladimir Putin, it's a military debacle.
He understands that this has been a mess. I don't think he's accepted that he is defeated,
because the essence of being Putin is never accepting that you've been defeated.
Fred Kagan's Institute for the Study of War produces daily maps showing how much ground Russia has been forced to give up since its invasion stalled. Putin is trying to make up for it by unleashing drone and missile strikes against Ukraine's cities.
Putin is looking for ways to break Ukraine's will to continue the fight. And most importantly, I think he's focused on trying to break Western support for Ukraine.
Which does he have a better chance of breaking?
The will of the Western democracies. I think he has very little chance of breaking the will of the Ukrainians in any short period of time.
The Biden administration put on a Christmas pageant of support for Zelensky during a whirlwind visit to the nation's capital. The embodiment of his country's fighting spirit. Zelensky thanked the U.S. for the $22 billion in weapons it has already committed and made clear he will be asking for more.
We have artillery. Yes. Thank you. Is it enough? Honestly, not really.
Ukraine is heading into the dead of winter under a continuing barrage of Russian drone and missile strikes.
Destroying the systems to provide heat and light to the Ukrainian people during the coldest, darkest part of the year. Russia is using winter as a weapon.
Kagan thinks Ukraine can turn the weapon of winter against the Russians.
Right now, the Ukrainians have a window of opportunity. This winter, especially as the ground freezes, if we provide them with the systems they need, the Russian army is still disorganized and generally reeling, and the Ukrainians have an opportunity to regain a lot of territory.
How much longer do you expect this war to go on?
It can go on for years. That's unlikely, but possible.
How long is likely to be determined by how much more territory Zelensky retakes and Putin loses.
The art here is helping Putin understand that he's lost this round and it's time to fold this hand. We have to persuade him that this approach, this military approach, is done and he cannot other than continue to lose here. He's not there yet, and we need to help the Ukrainians get him there as quickly as possible.
People used to say I sounded like Barbara Walters, which I thought absurd, of course.
First of all, every day I had to go and look at fashion shows. Oh. And then I had to have lunch at Maxime's and drink champagne. Oh.
Barbara had such a distinctive voice that frankly grated on some, a cultivated Eastern accent. And more to the point, she was the preeminent woman in network news, while I was the new girl at the Today Show, just in from somewhere in the Midwest, uncultivated and unknown. Me? Sound like Barbara Walters? You be the judge.
Good morning. At the White House, all the president's men hope last night's news conference turned public opinion.
My verdict? Guilty. I'd been innocently unaware until, half listening to pre-show chatter from the Today control room early one morning, I snapped awake at the sound of her voice. Why is Barbara Walters on the show? I wondered a little defensively until realizing it was a taped playback of me. Barbara loomed very large in my psyche when I was just starting out in the mid-70s. My chair at the Today desk had been hers only weeks before. After the show, I retreated to my office, which likewise had been hers, and the phone on my desk, that had been her phone. In her hands, it was magic. The powerful, the fallen, the heroes and villains, she could get anyone on that phone. For me, it mostly delivered a tuna fish sandwich for lunch. But she left me far more than a chair, a desk, and a phone. She left opportunity that hadn't existed before her. And not just for me. Barbara Walters was a trailblazer for a whole generation of women broadcasters. She was a role model before most people even thought women needed one. She arrived at Today in 1961. A writer-researcher dropped into a man's world. The women who appeared regularly were then known
as Today Girls, not Barbara.
I'm Barbara Walters with Jim Hart.
Good morning.
With drive, tenacity, and talent, she quickly became the leading woman in broadcast journalism, though admittedly, there was scant competition for the title. That was then.
You know many of the women in this picture. 29 of us came together 8 years ago at Barbara's invitation to mark her retirement. We represented her legacy, and she made it clear how she wanted to be remembered, as having inspired other young women to go into this business and succeed. "They are my legacy," she told us. "The lasting impact is the women who have, I hope, followed in my footsteps." That's what I've been thinking about, how all of us followed in Barbara Walters' footsteps, followed in them because she never relinquished the lead in 50 years. Today they call such a person the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time, Barbara Walters.
The Young and the Restless has been the number one daytime drama for 35 consecutive years. Now, in its 50th season, fans can enjoy their favorite soap in podcast form. YNR revolves around the lives and loves of the residents in Genoa City. This Midwestern metropolis is filled with generations of a wide variety of characters. Every week, hear all the rivalries, romances, hopes, and fears from the Emmy Award-winning series delivered directly to your ears. Watch The Young and the Restless weekdays on CBS, streaming on P+, and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I'm back with Season 3 of my podcast, Mobituaries. I'm looking forward to introducing you to more of my favorite people and things, all of them dead. From a top dog in 1990s television...
What happened? What's the story, Wishbone?
...to a former top banana.
In the world up to 1960, when the Gros Michel was the only banana that we got, they were clearly better.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
As you probably recall, Barbara Walters spent many years doing some of her best work at ABC News, where she worked with some other pretty familiar names, like correspondent Sam Donaldson and our longtime contributor, Ted Koppel. We decided to ask Ted to help us reminisce.
Before the break, you heard Jane's lovely tribute to Barbara Walters. It should come as no surprise to you, though, that when three of Barbara's old friends, Jane and Sam Donaldson and Ted Koppel, get together to share some reminiscences, that those will have, let's say, a somewhat earthier quality to them. So, for example, Barbara's competitiveness.
Oh, yes. 92, I booked President Bush, Governor Clinton, and Ross Perot, the three contestants, for the last broadcast that we had before the election day. I thought I'd booked Ross Perot, but his people called back and said, "I'm sorry, you can't do it." I said, "Why? Why?" They said, "Because Barbara Walters got wind of it and reminded him very forcefully that he had promised her the next big interview he did." Oh, I said to her later, "Barbara, well, I thought we were friends." She said, "Yes, we're friends, but I needed that interview. I get them all." And she did.
I don't know if you guys were trying to get the Monica Lewinsky interview, but I certainly was on it, and that was not going to happen.
I don't want to get too personal, but whenever I say I don't want to get too personal, but then you know.
Well, I'm out of here.
74 million people watched her interview. I think that 74 million people would not have watched the Jane Pauley Monica Lewinsky interview.
Monica, are you still in love with Bill Clinton?
No.
Sure?
Mm-hmm.
Over?
Sometimes I have warm feelings, sometimes I'm proud of him still, and sometimes I hate his guts, and he makes me sick.
Barbara came up through the school of hard knocks. When she began on the Today Show, things could hardly have been much tougher for her.
Later, when I left the club, the doorman asked if I wasn't taking off early. Well, I replied very grandly, "After all, I'm not a bunny. I'm a reporter for the National Broadcasting Company."
"I enjoyed seeing you as a bunny."
"Thank you."
"I did. We have a station break now."
I did an interview with Barbara way back in 2004. Here's how she remembered those early days on the Today Show.
Some high points. When I was first on the Today Show, I was hired as a writer. I was only allowed to write for the women. The big breakthrough was when I could write for the men.
Barbara Walters is in our Detroit studio with two guests this morning.
There was a man named Frank McGee. I was not allowed to ask a hard news question until he had already asked three.
Barbara did extremely well on the Today Show. So well, in fact, that ABC came and offered her the job of anchor of the evening news at $1 million a year. Now, she would have been the first woman in the United States to anchor a national news broadcast. And that $1 million salary made her the highest paid person on network television news at that time.
Closer to home, I have a new colleague to welcome. Barbara.
Thank you, Harry.
Having said all of that, she was paired with the late Harry Reasoner, and she and Harry did not hit it off at all. It was a disaster.
The decision was to welcome you as I would any respected and competent colleague of any sex, by noting that I've kept time on your stories in mind tonight. You owe me 4 minutes.
I have to shoot an arrow into Barbara Walters.
You mean you're making her fall in love with Harry Reasoner?
No. Harry just paid me to shoot her.
Just didn't care.
Stay away.
So following the disaster of the Barbara Walters-Harry Reasoner co-anchorship, Barbara nevertheless was determined to show that she was as tough a reporter as anybody else, and she came on this presidential trip, Jimmy Carter's trip around the world. One stop of which was in Tehran.
There was a big dinner dance for the Carters and many, many important people, but not Ted and Sam. We were on the outside waiting at the broadcast station for news. Barbara was invited, and Barbara danced with the Shah.
I'm quoting, Your Majesty. In a man's life, women count only if they are beautiful, graceful, and know how to stay feminine. You may be equal in the eyes of the law, but not in ability. You have never produced a Michelangelo or a Bach or even a great cook. You are schemers, you are evil, all of you. Oh, Your Majesty, you said all these things.
Not with the same words.
So you don't feel that women are in that sense, equal, that they have the same intelligence or ability?
Not so far. Maybe you will become in the future.
And we may as well continue the trip because we went on to New Delhi, where she interviewed the then Prime Minister, a fellow by the name of Morarji Desai, who had a somewhat unusual health habit.
If you drink your own urine for 2 days, third day you will find the urine is without any color or any smell or any taste. It's pure water-like thing.
At dinner that night, we ordered a bottle of wine. And someone, maybe it was you, Ted, poured the wine and said, it's not a great urine, but it's an adequate urine. And Barbara chimed in and said, for a urine, it travels quite well. And I said, well, for a urine, the aroma leaves something to be desired, but it'll do. I love Barbara for it. If you and I were going to make fools of ourselves, she wasn't going to be left behind.
And then she said, can I use that on the air? And Sam and I, as I recall, were unanimous and adamant in saying, Barbara, no way. It's a dinner time news program, and you cannot use it. And Barbara did not use it. P.S. A few weeks later, a fellow by the name of Dan Rather went out to New Delhi, interviewed Morarji Desai, and what do you think headlined 60 Minutes that week? You got it, the urine story.
Desai indulges in what to most people, West and East, is a repugnant habit. He drinks his own urine.
Barbara never complained. Not once. For so many years, it was really unacceptable, the notion that a woman could succeed in the same way that a man had in broadcast news. You've lived a good part of that, but just reflect a little on Barbara's role in fighting those battles, and fight them she did.
I had the privilege of interviewing Barbara and her daughter. It was Barbara's decision to choose me to do a sensitive story. She and her daughter had had a fraught relationship. at the time of the story. They were great. She looked at me during that interview and remarked that I was the one that had it all. I had a career. I had three children. I had, you know, a family and a career. And I think she felt that as a mother, she struggled and failed sometimes. You know, that was the cost of the career that she invented. She did things no woman was supposed to be able to do. But being a mother and having her career would wait for a different generation.
Are there times when I look at people, I have a friend, for example, who's got four children and 11 grandchildren, and we take walks through the parks, and she says, look at your life. And I say, yeah, I've got all those pictures on the wall that are turning yellow. And I said, look at your life. I mean, how rich you are. Four children, 11 grandchildren, that's richness. But I don't have that. I didn't take that path. I don't know whether I could have taken that path.
That was back in 2004. Barbara was just about to turn 75, and this was supposed to be her retirement interview. Well, fact of the matter is that some years earlier, back in 97, she had launched a little lifeboat of her own. It was a program by women, for women, called The View. Barbara was the producer, the creator, and of course, the star of that program. And it became, over the years, and remains to this day, one of the most influential programs on television, created by one of the most important people ever to appear on television, Barbara Walters.
If anything's got a chance of solving the world's problems, it's science and technology. And every breakthrough was the result of somebody doing the breaking through. I'm David Pogue. This is Unsung Science, the untold creation stories behind the most mind-blowing advances in science and tech. Presented by CBS News and Simon & Schuster. You can listen to Unsung Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, podcast fans. Stephen Colbert here to tell you all about The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. The Late Show Pod Show is a podcast featuring everything you love about the number one show in late night. It's got the jokes, the goofs, the monologue, the sizzling celebrity interviews, plus moments never before seen on TV, all wrapped up in a podcast that drops new episodes 7 days a week. With The Late Show Pod Show, you can listen to The Late Show while driving home from work or cooking dinner or getting ready for bed. By the way, amazing job flossing. Your dentist is going to be so proud. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Robert Costa. A new year, a new Congress, and...
we have fired Nancy Pelosi.
Divided government.
Most people have never heard of us. They're like... really? There's a group that Democrats and Republicans actually get together and sit down?
That's true.
Like,
yeah. They haven't heard of you.
In the splintered GOP-held House, Republican Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania and Democrat Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey still believe good things can happen.
Is it realistic that you can actually solve the problems next year?
Yes, and we have no choice. We have to.
But these moderates who lead the Problem Solvers Caucus could face challenges from problem makers.
How do you get attention if you're competing against a bomb thrower?
Well, we get things done, right? So when the infrastructure bill got across the finish line, that was us, along with our Senate colleagues, negotiating for months. You know, there would have been nothing versus getting something done.
But before any deals, many Republicans say it's time for investigations.
I want to be clear. This is an investigation of Joe Biden. And that's where the committee will focus in this next Congress.
It seems like you have a bucket of cold water to pour upon any hope that this is going to be a cheery Congress.
It's cheery if you enjoy dysfunction.
New York Times Magazine writer Robert Draper is the author of Weapons of Mass Delusion.
For those people who would like to see things actually get done, I don't think that this Republican conference is currently equipped for that. They're way too fractious, and I think the loudest voices in the room are the ones who are far more interested in politics as performance art than they are in the nitty-gritty of governance.
There is a shadow that falls over Capitol Hill still from January 6th. You have so many Republicans in the House who were trying to overturn the election, and they're still there.
No, that's correct. And there are not only Republicans who are still there who voted to not to certify the election, but there are Democrats who well remember that.
And some Republicans say impeachment is on the table.
When we turn on the TV in the spring, will it just be investigation after investigation, hearing after hearing about the Biden family and the Biden administration?
In the immediate, yes. I think that's the low-hanging fruit that Republicans, for the most part, can agree on, that it will be the party of payback when they take back the majority.
History, however, shows presidents can push back and never forget that they hold that veto pen.
This is Elizabeth Palmer. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un upped the ante in Asia this past year by test-firing missile after missile after missile. Over 60 of them. One flew over Japan and set the warning sirens wailing. So what will Kim do for an encore in 2023? Satellite pictures suggest he's planning a nuclear test to expand his already fearsome military machine.
There is a considered opinion that they're continuing the development of miniaturized nuclear devices, nuclear warheads.
Joe Bermudez is an analyst with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
What's the end game here?
Survival of the Kim regime and the survival of North Korea. And in that order, I would say.
For help in reining in North Korea, Joe Biden appealed to China's president, Xi Jinping, when they met in Bali in November. She made no promises. But America's president signaled that the meeting had dialed down U.S.-China hostilities.
We're going to compete vigorously, but I'm not looking for conflict. I'm looking to manage this competition responsibly.
In the new year, Secretary of State Antony Blinken will visit China for more talks that will focus in part on Taiwan.
America's short-term goal is to dissuade Beijing from invading the island it claims is its own. But it's China's long-term goals to wield a lot more power clear across the region that has its neighbors, America's allies, worried. Joint military exercises between American, Japanese, and South Korean forces will continue in 2023, and the arsenal is only going to grow. Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida just announced the country's biggest military buildup since World War II. As for China, it's already at war against COVID-19, which exploded at the end of the year after the government abruptly ended mass testing and mandatory quarantines. Now, much from its own stability to the world's supply chains rests on how well it treats the sick and speed vaccinates the elderly. As 2023 dawns, it's just too early to tell. It's our Sunday morning tradition. Time for us to say hail and farewell to those we lost in the months gone by. We've asked Lee Cowan to help us celebrate their lives.
If you wanted the sky, I would ride across the sky in letters that would soar a thousand feet high to serve with love.
His class, his style, and his grace made Sidney Poitier extraordinary among actors.
There's a good angel looking after me somewhere.
But also a model of social consciousness.
I didn't make this world. It was handed to me exactly like it is.
Every role he played.
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
He broke so many barriers. He was the first black actor to win an Oscar in a leading role.
It is a long journey to this moment.
Sidney Poitier was 94. We lost another champion, the great Bill Russell. The Boston Celtic was perhaps best known for his prowess on the basketball court, but he too fought passionately for equality and inclusion. He left us at 88.
What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
With that one call, Dodger announcer Vince Scully summed up a nation's simmering racial tensions.
The impossible has happened.
The strike two pitch is hit back to the box.
For almost 70 years, he was baseball's poet.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting.
The game?
Unbelievable.
Won't be the same without it.
In July of 1941, five young Negroes made aviation history at Tuskegee, Alabama.
Those who experienced injustice at home helped their country fight it overseas.
We were just as interested in supporting that effort as anybody else at that time.
Charles McGee was one of the last surviving members of the Tuskegee Airmen. He died quietly at 102. By contrast, Queen Elizabeth's death was announced to the world. She was the longest reigning monarch in British history, 70 years on the throne. Her sense of duty reigned supreme.
And so did her dry wit.
Oh, really? Please.
Boom.
Yeah, I'm proud to be a coal miner's daughter.
In this country, we lost a queen of our own, Loretta Lynn.
Rock tells the story of my life. Everything you hear in that song is true.
Did Nashville try to change you at all?
Well, everybody tried to learn me how to talk. I told them it was wasting their time. I've been talking this way all my life. Forget it.
It'll be over my dead body, so get out while you can. 'Cause you ain't woman enough to take my man.
Her hearty rural roots resonated. A true coal miner's daughter who wrote from the heart.
I ain't about to be nobody else. I'm just me.
Meatloaf was certainly himself, too. Marvin Lee Adday had a sound all his own. His Bat Out of Hell album showed that rock music could also be operatic. Meatloaf left us at 74. Hogan's Heroes found humor in perhaps the most unlikely place of all, a prisoner of war camp in Germany. Robert Clary played the funny Frenchman, Corporal LeBeau.
Good morning, Jules.
LeBeau, you should be in bed. Everybody should be asleep so that they can count the strudel.
But he had a very serious side.
I am a survivor of the Jewish Holocaust.
It wasn't until decades later that Clary revealed that he himself survived 31 months in concentration camps.
There are some people in this world right now denying what happened, and you cannot let them tell those lies. It's very important to teach those young kids it did happen. Do not forget.
Sadly, the number of those who lived through those horrors is dwindling.
Take Hannah Pick. She was one of Anne Frank's best friends. She lived to the age of 93. Ilsa Schoer and her sister Ruth survived the camps together, and they died together, just days apart. It's impossible, really, for anyone to understand the risks of those who went against the Nazi regime.
How many? 600. More.
But Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List gave us at least a glimpse. Mimi Reinhardt was the real-life secretary that typed up the names on that list, mostly Polish-Jewish refugees. She lived to be 107.
How could you?
How could I what?
You were making out during Schindler's List?
Two of our beloved TV shows suffered losses. Liz Sheridan, who played Jerry Seinfeld's mom, left us this past year.
Doesn't like you? How could anyone not like you?
You know, I was thinking today, I never liked those Seinfelds anyway. He's an idiot altogether.
And we also lost Estelle Harris, who played George Costanza's mom.
I go out for a quart of milk. I come home and find my son treating his body like it was an amusement park.
They were both 93.
Look at that. I'm gorgeous and sexy.
And dead as a doornail.
What?
You're in the obituaries.
Oh, God!
Cheers lost a member of its family, too. Kirstie Alley, who played Rebecca Howe for so many years.
The days that I had here at Cheers were they're the best days of my life.
Don't touch me! Don't touch me! We'll have this baby without you touching me!
She also played Molly, opposite John Travolta in Look Who's Talking.
Coffee regular. Love it.
You know, that's breast milk.
Travolta called their relationship special, just like the one he had with another co-star he lost, Olivia Newton-John.
Sandy?
Tell me about it, Stud.
Grease became one of the highest-grossing movie musicals ever.
If you love me, let me know. If you don't, then let me go.
And in the 70s and 80s, Newton-John herself became a legend. She very bravely and publicly battled cancer in her final years, showing us all a dignified and thoughtful end.
After a time, I went, you know what? I don't know what my time is, but I need to enjoy my life, so I'm going to eat a cookie if I want it, and I'm going to have a cup of tea if I want it, and if I want to have a little bit of wine, I'm going to do that, because the joy of life and everyday living has to be a part of that healing process as well.
Love can build a bridge.
Country star Wynonna Judd is healing too, after losing her mom, Naomi, who took her own life just a day before she and her daughter were to be inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Do you still feel your mom?
I do. I feel her nudging me. And sometimes I laugh, and sometimes I say, I really miss you. Why aren't you here so we can argue?
Really?
Yeah.
Cher lost her mom too, Georgia Holt.
And I almost died.
Like her daughter, she was a singer, a model, and an actress in her own right.
I'll always love you.
In grief, maybe that's the greatest honor we can give, to remember the happiest moments.
You are my tomorrow.
Not the sad ones.
And I'm your yesterday.
While it wasn't real family, those who loved Leave It to Beaver are mourning the loss of Tony Dow, who played Wally Cleaver.
Good night, Mom. Good night, Dad.
He was America's big brother, who guided Beaver when Ward, their dad, wasn't really around to do it himself.
Hi, Wally.
Speaking of dads, how could we forget Jim Redmond, who rushed onto the racetrack after son Derek pulled a hamstring in the 1992 Olympics? They finished the 400-meter arm-in-arm. When Taylor Hawkins, the legendary drummer for the band Foo Fighters, died at only 50 this year, it was his son Shane who played the drums in his father's stead.
You girls are the greatest. I must be the luckiest dad in the whole world.
Bob Saget was perhaps best known as a TV dad.
I'm the only television father left that you can trust. That's what I'm telling you.
But live stage comedy was really his passion. One of the nicest guys in the business, had a wit that could be pretty sharp.
Gilbert, you have the delivery of someone who's just been pepper sprayed. Seriously. Look at you.
Remember Gilbert Gottfried?
I Googled Bob Saget and it came back, why?
His voice found its way into so many characters we remember.
Oh, boy. He's cracked. He's gone nuts. Jafar, get a grip.
Iago, the parrot, was annoying and yet oddly lovable.
See?
Perfect for Gottfried's talents.
Tale as old as time.
Our kids know Angela Lansbury as the teapot.
True as it can be.
For adults, though, she was Jessica Fletcher in Murder, She Wrote.
Well, good plots are hard to come by, but of course this one doesn't have an ending.
By the sea, with the fishy splashing.
But her talents really burst through on Broadway.
Clear the decks, clear the tracks.
Where she was a 6-time Tony Award winner.
We think you're just sensational.
Lansbury was 96.
Yet there's the bold, brave spring of the tiger that quickens your walk.
Robert Morse took his Broadway stardom and turned it into a film career. And then he reemerged decades later on television.
Bert?
The stars in the sky.
As one of the stars of Mad Men, where his character exited with a true flourish.
The best things in life are free.
In the world of make-believe...
Thank you.
It's not every day your young man turns 11, now, is it?
Few made you believe more than Rubeus Hagrid.
There's no Hogwarts without you, Hagrid.
Robbie Coltrane, the Scotsman who embodied that half-giant, left us at 72.
What kind of human being would I be if I couldn't wring joy from a dear friend's misery?
But sometimes giants can be diminutive in stature.
I've never witnessed such inappropriate behavior.
And that's certainly the case for Leslie Jordan. We lost him at only 67.
I'm going to go put in a Magnum P.I. rerun to get in the mood.
While we're on the topic of Magnum P.I., we lost Roger Mosley this past year. He left us at 83. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! For fans of 80s and 90s stardom, it was an especially sad year. We lost Ivan Reitman, the director of a host of fan favorites, and Joe Turkel, the congenial but creepy bartender in The Shining.
Your money's no good here.
One of the biggest mob movies of the 90s lost two of its stars.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Ray Liotta and Paul Sorvino, both of them good fellas. But when it came to mob hits, Sonny Corleone's demise in The Godfather required actor James Caan to be rigged with a lot of tiny explosives.
On me, I had 147. Around the toll booth, 5,000.
Were you scared?
A little, but there were girls on the set, and I had to do it.
I think I can pick up something visual. A news broadcast using a system I think they once called video.
Television was the colloquial term.
Put it on the screen.
Those of us who really work in broadcasting have been mourning our own this past year. David Small, a longtime Sunday morning editor. Talented producer Diane Renault. Michael Hoppy Hopkins, the man in charge of CBS logistics. Victor Paganuzzi, who designed our Sunday morning set. Lenny Mancini, who told everyone how to light it. And Robin Metz, who created so many of our beloved sons.
In an interview which the Washington Post reports...
Our own Bill Plant covered the White House for CBS for more than half a century. He was family here.
I'm Bill Plant. I hope you'll join us here again next Sunday morning.
A couple days ago, our UPS driver delivered a fruitcake to us.
We'll certainly miss humorous Roger Welch, who sent us his postcards from Nebraska.
What's important about fishing is not so much the fish, but the fishing.
What has drawn me to my subject has been the story of that individual and what we can learn from it.
We lost history storyteller too, David McCullough, whose writing and his voice enlightened us on the lessons of our past. One of those lessons is to never repeat this again. The internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Norman Mineta was one of them.
Hi, this is Secretary Mineta from the Department of Transportation calling. Governor, how are you doing?
He went on to become the first Asian American cabinet secretary. And he helped get the U.S. to formally apologize to Japanese Americans for their mistreatment. We lost other world leaders, too, like Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, who was nothing if not to the point.
Frankly, this is not cojones. This is cowardice.
There are so many we failed to mention. The wild, like Jerry Lee Lewis, who in the early days of rock and roll lived up to his nickname, The Killer. As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The groundbreaking, like Coolio. And the voice of some of the 80s biggest movie hits, Irene Cara.
If your life was bad to you.
But we thought we'd end with Christine McVie, the Fleetwood Mac hitmaker who reminded us that yesterday is indeed gone. The point is to think about tomorrow. To all we've lost this past year, we bid a fond hail and farewell.
We start off the year 2023 with our January issue of the Book Report. A look back at some of the best reads of the year gone by, along with some coming attractions from critic Ron Charles of The Washington Post.
This is the Book Report. Before we say goodbye to 2022, I want to look back and tell you about five of my favorite novels of the year. Barbara Kingsolver has taken Charles Dickens' classic novel, David Copperfield, and transformed it into her own modern-day masterpiece. Demon Copperhead is about a boy in Appalachia trying to make his way in the world while struggling with foster care and opioid addiction. It's as funny as it is heartbreaking, and it's got a voice that leaps right off the page. Young Mungo by Scottish writer Douglas Stewart is a gripping story about a sweet young man falling in love for the first time in a violently homophobic community. To toughen him up, his alcoholic mother sends him on a camping trip with a couple of guys from her AA meeting. Unfortunately, they are not at all what they seem, and you'll wish you could protect young Mungo from what's ahead. For some sharp cultural satire, turn to The Latecomer by Jean Hanf Korelitz. This is a story about wealthy triplets who hate each other and then discover a secret about their father that reorders their lives. Korelitz uses this witty family epic to explore modern art, liberal education, political correctness, and American spirituality while delivering one surprise after another. In 2021, Abdulrazak Gurra won the Nobel Prize, and this year he's released a new novel in the United States called Afterlives. Set in the early 20th century, it turns the old story of colonization on its head by pushing the Europeans into the background and letting us follow the intersecting lives of villagers in East Africa as they struggle to survive and thrive. Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez is a romantic comedy about a very successful wedding planner who can't find a partner herself. Meanwhile, her brother is a popular congressman, a champion for Puerto Rico, who may be slipping into a compromising position. This is a novel about family secrets, national schemes, racial politics, and of course, love. That's it for the Book Report. I'm Ron Charles.
I'm Jane Pauley. We wish you a very happy new year, and please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone and creator of 1883, comes the new Paramount Plus original series, 1923, a Yellowstone origin story.
You have no rights here.
Starring Academy Award nominee Harrison Ford.
Tell the world what happens when they cross me.
And Academy Award winner Helen Mirren.
Greed will be the thing that kills us all.
Stream 1923 now, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it for free.
Hello, friends. I'm Dulce Sloan, correspondent for The Daily Show.
And I'm Josh Johnson, writer for The Daily Show.
And we have a new podcast called Hold Up.
We're going to be talking about staycations, the merits of texting versus calling, conscious rap versus club bangers.
You know, topics that are big to us, but small to everybody else.
And as best friends who rarely agree on anything, there's going to be plenty of arguments.
And I'm not losing the argument to anybody with that hairline.
Attacks already in the promo. That's fine. Listen to Hold Up wherever you get your podcasts.